Welcome back to Stable Pod, a podcast where we host conversations with individuals who are shaping the future of decentralized systems. I'm your host, Juan Escavel. I'm joined by my co-host, Gustav Ehrentoft. How are you today, Gustav?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. I'm very excited to talk with Marcelo and to be recording again.
Today's guest is actively trailblazing asset and treasury management for many of the DAOs you know and love. Marcelo is the co-founder at Caparkey, a team providing financial services to the leading DAOs. Welcome to the podcast, Marcelo.
Glad to be here. Thank you for inviting.
Awesome. I think a good place to start is with the founding story of Caparkey. Could you share how it was started and, of course, the mission of your team?
Yeah, of course. So, well, you know, everybody in blockchain talks about banking the unbanked. Still, nobody talks about banking DeFi protocols, which is really a necessary condition for the DeFi we want, right? Global, 24/7, open source, on-chain, most importantly, stable and resilient. So banking DeFi is what Caparkey does. We provide financial services to the leaders in each DeFi category, and we create some network effects and modes for these leaders, as well as robustness for the whole ecosystem and its users. And we always do it really the right way. And also we define the standard of non-custodial asset management, also building some automation tooling. So we've been doing this for 3 years already. We've been managing the treasuries of ENS, Cow, Aave, and we built some working group on other DAOs. So yeah, we've actively protected the treasuries of our DAOs for over $1 billion. And yeah, we've created this sustainable business that is Caparkey.
Could you take us back to the founding, like what were the motivations for founding the team and what spurred, Caparkey's?
Yeah. In the beginning, we had, well, you know, in the beginning of DeFi, which was, I would say, the first quarter 2019, we had all of these DeFi protocols who still lead their verticals today. And most of these teams, they didn't have any type of finance working group or any specialized knowledge in treasury management. So, at Caparkey, we had experience managing funds, and we started helping the Agnosis DAO. This was around DeFi summer 2020. And so we started with farming strategies.
A good time to start, no?
Yeah, of course. Of course it was. Yeah, crazy moment. So we started supporting the DAO in all of their financial operations, treasury, but also capital budgeting, capital allocations. And then we started expanding to other DAOs. So our main goal is to support the mission of these DAOs and execute their mission and vision through our support from the treasury.
I think an important note about Caparkey's history is that it came from Gnosis DAO. I think it's very interesting how, you know, the evolution of, because Gnosis DAO, before that, it was just Gnosis, you know, the private company. And then something changed within the community that really allowed for Caparkey, this experiment, what asset management is for DeFi protocols to really, you know, come to fruition. So I'm curious just to hear more about, like, what was it about that specific moment in time that really, like, oh, like, let's step up and let's start to provide this service that you clearly saw was lacking in the space. There's a lot of things was a perfect timing for Caparkey to come out. So I'm just curious to learn a little bit more about that history there.
Yeah, of course. So if you think about it, Safe, the initial smart wallet, was created for a treasury requirement of Agnosis. You know, they didn't need to manage the ICO funds, and they didn't have the infrastructure to do it. So they built their own infrastructure, which became Safe. So it was quite similar for us. We had to manage the funds in a non-custodial way because, you know, we wanted to respect the principles of DeFi, respect the ownership of the DAO. So we would never be able to take funds from the DAO. So that's how we started using the roles modifier. This is a tooling developed by Gnosis Guild, another team of Gnosis Mafia. So this was one of foundational tool for managing these DAO's treasuries, right? Non-custodial way. And well, also everything on chain and everything in a transparent manner. So our main goal was to improve on the existing practices of those days. You know, before treasuries used to be managed by VCs. I don't know if you remember, we have some very bad stories of teams losing their funds from all of these stories from centralized from CeFi, really.
So your team really came out once Gnosis transitioned to a DAO, correct? Like they needed another party to help basically lift this off the ground.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's how we became service providers for the Gnosis DAO.
And just quickly, where does the name come from? This has always puzzled me.
that's a tough one. So it's inspired by the Carpathian Mountains, in Eastern Europe.
Oh, yeah, the Carpathian Mountain. Ah, okay, very cool. Yeah, it's like a mountain range that goes, I think it's from Romania and then all the way up to Poland, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Ah, very cool. Yeah,
beautiful.
It's on my bucket list to go.
So coming back to the activity from your team, you mentioned some of the DAOs you're currently active in. I'm curious, how does the team evaluate where to contribute? What is some of the strategies, some of your thought process for deciding, whether it's worth or possible to go help contribute at this ecosystem?
Yeah, every DAO is different, so they have very different needs. Sometimes DAOs have problems with their runway, so we help with raising funds. Sometimes they have a lot of idle funds they need to put to work, so we develop these DeFi strategies with a strong focus on risk management. Sometimes, and many times, treasuries are mostly native tokens, so we help them to get some utility out of this treasury, right? Most treasuries should discount the value of their native tokens to zero, with some exceptions. There are very important tools that the treasury can perform with their native tokens, mostly market making, not having to rely on a third party to align with their tokens. They could just do it themselves. Another one is using the token as a collateral. Let's say for some very small requirements of funding. So this is a very risky one, but still there are options to create debt between markets. So really it's up to the DAO.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm curious, your team has obviously grown a lot in the last 3 years. I'm curious just to hear just one more question about your team. Like, what's the current makeup, the structure and the size?
So we have around 35 people, plus a few service providers who have full-time contributors to Carpathki. So the way we organize is these independent cells in each DAO that really become part of the DAO. And these cells are usually composed of financial engineers, developers. Then we have a team doing governance that also support all of these finance working groups. We also have a tech team building infrastructure. That's basically what we call the orchestration layer, this execution and automations, data, and the non-custodial infrastructure. So those would be the main moving parts. We also have a team helping with capital raise, just you can think of it as integrations, business development, M&A, something like this, depending on the DAO's requirement. But the most important ones are these, the independent cells, who are the core of the treasuries.
Wow, it really sounds like you're trying to bank DeFi. That's a robust team. and structure. I want to shift over to, you know, some of the notable ecosystem contributions your team is making. I think, you know, a few of people, listeners listening in, maybe have heard of you, and maybe, you know, they hear of you of an Aave, they seen you, you know, at ENS. So I just wanted to dive into Aave just real quick. You recently onboarded as a financial services provider. Could you share with the listeners, you know, the backstory of this engagement, what it's trying to achieve?
Yeah, sure. So the main goal for this engagement is to support the treasury operations, also the safety module, help a little bit on risk and design of the safety module, which is one of the critical parts, you know, for the stability of the money markets. Money markets are really the foundational layer of DeFi. So it's critical for it to be really robust. So we're also collaborating with TokenLogic on that front. So yeah, building smart contracts and making sure all of the DeFi strategies are safe.
What have been some of the, you know, notable lessons from this type of engagement? You know, maybe for teams listening in who might be interested in getting into this type of, you know, engagement with DAOs. It's very unique. It's very, it's a lot of lessons learned there. So I'm just curious if you have any wise words of wisdom to share in terms of how to, you know, go about these types of engagements with decentralized organizations.
So one thing we learned is you can really tell who's here for the short term, who's here for the long term. We've had some opportunistic people in the past, and that didn't last long. I would say our main lesson learned is really to focus in the long term, to start investing, start contributing and adding value, and even before we get revenues from the DAO. So I would say that's something that really sticked with our DAOs, is the long-term approach.
I think another unique aspect to this type of engagement within DAOs is the fact that there's a lot of stakeholder management, right? It's not just the financial services themselves. There's a lot of people involved in the entire process, you know, for good or bad, whichever side of the argument you're on. So I think maybe what's stopping us from, you know, the next evolution for now is just really governance systems are still very immature. You know, maybe the more mature teams are kind of wary of like what they're going to get into with all this, you know, governance drama politics. Do you have any takes here or any comments about that whole dynamic that plays out?
Yeah, well, yes, we're learning and relearning a lot of lessons learned from let's say corporate governance. Really, I think governance is a driver for change. It's a driver for taking the most out of management and the people who are building. So I really think, yes, this is a critical piece of it. Well, we're just learning, you know, this is the first time, or it's not very common to have all of these proposals, everything public, you know, it creates a lot of noise. It's quite difficult. So these professional teams going governance, I think they are, they're pushing our industry forward.
Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons we have this podcast, Gustav, right, Gustav? Is to like have the conversations with people actually doing the work and to help the next group of people that are going to come in, you know, onboard them and have them get a better understanding of the way things operate. And of course, like make it a more better, more robust system, right? The more decentralized, that means the more stakeholders are involved, right? And so that's one of the aims of this podcast is to really learn from each other.
Yeah, I think like, I mean, we can also just see, I think we see like a lot of teams kind of like getting a little bit the head on the wall, against the wall, right? I think we've seen a lot of the other like professional delegate organizations kind of like shutting down their delegate arm or, you know, changing paths along the way, right? I think it's also, you know, like we look at something like treasury management, right? And you know, Marcelo, I think you guys are sitting on 95 or something percent market share, right? Where like, I mean, I know a lot of teams working on treasury management for DAOs, but just no one else has seemed to be able to crack how to actually work with DAOs in a meaningful engagement over like a longer period of time, right? So like in general, I think we see just, you know, people and teams struggling with how to, you know, be interacting and creating a business around working with DAOs. So yeah, I think this is like very necessary as well. Just kind of like picking up on that, you know, Marcelo, like what is it that kind of like puts you guys apart from your competition? You know, why is it that you guys are, you know, able to be such a dominant market leader in the treasury management vertical of service providers for DAOs?
I like to think, I think we have three very important points that we need to be very good at in order to work well in this industry. The first one is DeFi knowledge and risk management. That's a tough one. It's still, there are a lot of people who have these skills. But what's very difficult to get is the second one is the infrastructure, right? You need the knowledge. You also need the infrastructure. There are also, again, not many teams with the infrastructure. And the third one that is also very important is the governance part, making sure we navigate this chaos, making sure we gain the trust of the community, token holders, you know, eventually a token holder, but token holders are, you know, the community, founders, other delegates, other investors. So of course that's a tough one. So I think it's, you need to be very good at the three of these things, DeFi knowledge, infrastructure, and governance.
Yeah, and I think also like here, you mentioned something which is also like, I think, quite important, right? Is that I think, you know, trust, it's difficult to earn, right? It's difficult to gain, especially with DAOs, where they just inherently, like when you come in, whatever you're proposing, they just inherently see you like someone who's trying to put their hand in the cookie jar being the treasury. And they have this like, you know, I would say like a very skeptical stance compared to if you work with normal businesses, right? If you're selling your product to a normal company, the skepticism is definitely, I would say, like a lot lower than in a DAO where you're not just trying to convince the CFO or, you know, like a director or something like this. You're trying to convince, you know, hundreds of people typically who all of them have a way to voice their opinion. And then, you know, if you then lose your trust in an instance, then it's gone, right? It's really difficult to recover from that. So it's also a thing like, you know, the consistency is really important. And it really takes time to kind of build up like a good and strong brand, which, you know, you guys, of course, have done here. So yeah, I think, and it's something, you know, which so easily can be taken away from you, right? So we've seen other teams that were like quite successful earlier working with certain protocols. But then, you know, something happened and then they get offboarded, right? And they don't get back in.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. We're very paranoid with losing funds. That's something we cannot afford to do for sure. Reputation is exactly what you mentioned. We see a lot of proposals, people trying to take a piece of the treasury. So we take the other side. So we make sure the team, they really feel part of the DAO, they get paid, they get incentivized in the token of the DAO. And we tell them, you know, first you are, let's say, if you're working for Aave, first you're Aave, then you are Karpatki. And I think everybody got it right, you know, just to make sure that your loyalty is first with the DAO you work with. You know, we have these things today when you work for a company. It's very easy if you're hired by this company that you're part of the company. But then with the DAO, it's not that clear who defines who is part of the DAO and who's not. You know, in my mind, at the end, it's just conviction. So first, you know, get the conviction that you're part of the DAO. And once you're part of the DAO, it's your treasury, it's your money. So you're going to do your best to protect the interest of your DAO. So that's a little bit of how we face our treasuries.
Marcelo, could you talk a little bit about how I wanted to know how certain DAOs have to reach a certain state of maturity to be able to, maybe you think otherwise, right? That's why I'm bringing this up. DAOs have to reach a state of maturity to be able to define what their objectives are to then be able to distribute or like actively manage their treasury. Do you think the same way or do you think a different way? I noticed that with certain DAOs, they haven't even written out like what their objectives are yet. You know, they're still in the early phase. Maybe they're not really sure how to properly decentralize, one foot in, one foot out. But it seems like for Coparkey to come in, they need certain things defined, certain things matured to a point to then being able to serve the needs of that DAO. Is that a correct way of...
Yeah, I think so. I think this is a huge challenge because who defines the direction of the DAO? Different groups will have different goals. So getting into a shared vision sometimes is super tough. For the most part, the most successful ones being the ones who had a strong leader, founder who set the vision, then it's much easier to align. Otherwise, you know, it's quite chaotic. So I would say for us, we usually aligned. We aligned to the, for the most part, the vision of the founders and the interests of the token holders. If the DAO is really chaotic, we make sure we can contribute to these strategic goals, maybe define it first. But for the most part, we're just followers. I would say that's, you know, our mandate is always to serve and follow. So yes, we're followers.
I think this is like a good segue because I noticed something that we have talked about before, right, Marcelo? And so because maybe I think this could be like a good way to kind of talk a little bit about, you know, like the type of customer that you guys take on and why that is. And also, you know, the vision for this, right? I know that you have like a pretty specific type of client when you work with teams in mind.
Yeah. Yes. Our first priority is this leading DeFi protocol. So we want to support, we want to create this treasury network where we share resources and we make sure these DAOs can help each other create some positive sum games. We have some history of proposing technical partnerships. You can think of them like joint ventures. So these technical partnerships, eventually, if they make sense, can finish with a token swap to make sure both DAOs are aligned with the same goals. But also, we're interested in these leading DeFi protocols because we can also manage risk in a much better way. Let's say... we can lend between DAOs. That's something we've been discussing. So all of these financial functions are much easier to combine, to compose for DeFi protocols. So I would say our priority are DeFi protocols.
And then, you know, since you're looking to work, when you talk a lot about, you know, setting up like this like network of protocols, right? And you know, like the sharing of resources and you know, potentially, you know, backing each other with loans. Can you go a little bit more into detail about, you know, what you envision here for kind of like the future of DeFi protocols, right? Like what is basically, you know, you guys have a very clear mission of what you guys want to achieve. So maybe you can talk a little bit about this, you know, like why is it that this decision has been taken, right? Because, you know, some founders would say, you know, like, hey, I mean, you know, I just want to work with everyone who wants to pay me, right? And, you know, there's a lot more protocols that has a treasury that I'm sure would be happy to pay you guys to come in and take care. But I know it doesn't align fully with your vision. So maybe you can talk a little bit to this.
Yeah, so we imagine this DeFi ecosystem that it's the only global financial system that exists today. And we expect this financial system to take over all of the traditional financial system. So in order to make sure that happens, I think risk management is our... If there is... Let's say if there is one thing that Coparkey, you know, one drop in the ocean Coparkey can provide to all of this ecosystem is, let's say my dream is maybe Coparkey might avoid some huge systemic failure of the whole ecosystem thanks to their, you know, alerts or managing risk for the DAOs. So I would say that's the end game for us, is provide some robustness and resilience to the DeFi ecosystem. So yes, we're very focused into this because we believe the largest ecosystem is going to be DeFi. So yeah, it's very tied to our thesis.
Could you speak a little bit more, Marcelo, to this treasury network effect? Could you elaborate a little bit more for the listeners? What are you guys seeing as a team that is enabling you to spot this this network of different DeFi protocols? What is this opportunity that you're finding for your team?
So this is part of a problem we face when we just started with Ignosis doing DeFi farming. We realized we had to materialize some of the farming rewards into stable coins. And then we had to compose, you know, to maximize capital efficiency. We had to compose and, let's say, choose one money market, choose one AMMs. So we started choosing who are the ones who were going to stack this liquidity. So that's something that naturally occurred, that there was these protocols that we chose that were the safest ones, that were the ones we wanted to work with. So this is how we started expanding into these protocols, sharing this liquidity, you know, composing the same liquidity between the protocols that are part of this treasury network. And also we found that once we started accumulating tokens, we had the power to define incentives, you know, which protocols is going to accumulate more TVL based on our rewards. So all of this started creating some modes. Let's say if you are part of this network, if you're you start receiving incentives, you start receiving liquidity, then all of this access to integrations to get more utility for your token. And also other things like we mentioned, the partnerships, token swaps. So all of these things is makes this network, you know, very valuable to be part of it. And this is something that's happening today.
Where do you leave room for? I know you want to be safe and you want to go where there's, of course, you know, you're familiar with the mechanisms and the protocols. But where does your team leave room for these new protocols, the new innovation, the stuff that maybe? I guess would be, you know, a lot riskier, and maybe it would only take up a small percentage, but you know, you still want that, you still have that risk appetite, right? That you want to be exposed to. Do you think about that at all?
Yeah, yes, of course. So there is a huge opportunity in anything related to derivatives. I would say we still don't have a lot of very liquid and safe options for derivatives on chain. I mean, not compared to the options we have off chain. So I would say that's a huge market. Let's say insurance, that's another very, very green field, which I expect, you know, it really fits with our philosophy. You know, we need more protection, more insurance. There are a lot of other DeFi applications, but for the most part, I would say, these are the ones that come to my mind right now.
Could you share a little bit more about how you see M&A working? You know, we've seen a few instances in the past in DeFi history, but how do you see M&A evolving as a trend, and also how Coparkey plays a role in enabling M&A?
So I think there is definitely a place for protocols who complement each other. I'm a believer protocols should specialize. And once they specialize, all of these financial primitives need complements and they need to stack, they need to combine each other to improve capital efficiency. So for all of these cases, it really makes sense of these protocols to get together, right? And try to concentrate liquidity, because you know, even though we're in DeFi, a decentralized liquidity or fragmented liquidity is something we don't want. So we want deep liquidity, but you know, liquidity begets liquidity. So M&A is going to play a big role there, getting these protocols closer to each other. A lot of opportunities there. Yeah.
So with M&A is like, because I guess like a merger would like, is a token swap, like what can you say, like a you know, I would say like a soft merger, or, you know, like how deep do you think these, you know, mergers and acquisitions will actually go?
I think there's going to be a lot of them for just acquisitions. We have a lot of these big treasuries with the native tokens. So it really makes sense for them to start spending their native tokens in exchange for high potential teams. And then these teams could they could sell some of these tokens in the secondary market. And they could, you know, fund their operations this way. But the important thing here is these acquisitions or M&As is the main driver for diversification of the treasury. Because, you know, in the first stage, you have almost 100% of your native token. Then in the final stage, you have a huge diversified portfolio of a treasury. So let's say if it's for a layer two, let's say Arbitrum or Optimism, you would have a huge portfolio of all of the companies building on top of you, which is something with a lot of potential. But of course, every case is different.
Yeah, but I guess it's unique in this space, right? Where it's like, does having the tokens constitute ownership? You know, ask anyone in the space, they'll say arguably yes, right? So I guess what Gustav was trying to ask was like, does the token swap, does that suffice for like an actual acquisition? Or is there like, is it the actual like, okay, the mechanisms, the contracts are actually now governed by, let's say, Uniswap, you know, they've made an acquisition of another protocol. Now that's technically an acquisition. Yeah, I guess we're just trying to like paint the picture, like, you know, of like, what does this actually look like in this?
Different, right? Because yeah, it's kind of like more like the practicality of like, what does it actually look like, you know?
Yeah, you're right. For utility tokens, that's tough, because what does it mean? But for governance tokens, which I'm a big fan of governance tokens, they start looking like ownership. Once you have access to these strategic decisions, it really starts feeling like having access to a board in a company. So in this sense, these governance tokens, they really feel like owning the business.
Totally.
I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, there's still a lot to develop in that space, I think. Talk to me, Marcelo, talk to me about uncollateralized lending for protocols. Yeah, I mean, paint the picture of like what this trend, how you see this developing for DAOs. How can they take advantage of actually being able to take out these types of you know, loans and putting this capital to work?
Well, you know, the main difference of raising debt and let's say equity or tokens is that, let's say when the DAO gets liquidated, it goes bankrupt and gets dissolved. The main difference is the liquidation preference, right? If a DAO has a loan, debtors should be paid first and token holders should be paid last. So just because we don't have any way to enforce this today in most DAOs, you know, we don't have a legal system that, or still we're very early into this legal systems on chain, it's very difficult to enforce. So at the end, being a debtor to a DAO is super, super risky. So that's something we're trying to change from Karpatki, because we have execution power over the treasury. So we can make sure in an event like this, the debtor is paid first. So that's really that plus the company owning cash flows, right, is the basis for uncollateralized lending. So you can take a debt based on a promise of future cash flows. You can. It's quite safe to say that that debt is going to be paid. And if not, you know, you have assets to repay. So
would you say that it's primarily, well, it kind of sounds like you're saying this, so correct me if I'm wrong, it's primarily like a just an infrastructure thing. You know, once Karpatki is building up this infrastructure, they might be able to enable the automatic, you know, payment, repayment of these types of loans. Or is there other things that are still also missing? Is it just like the willingness to experiment with this type of thing? Yeah, I don't know if you have anything else to add.
Well, yeah, we have some infrastructure, but the key thing is here, right? When things go wrong, who gets paid first? So this is the tough part.
Yeah, I think like it's you know, it's like the recourse, right? It's like, what do you do? Because like let's say that, you know, I lend money to a DAO, and you know, they might have some collateral on the books. It might be their native token, right? But effectively, you know, I'm then banking on the fact that the token holders would execute a vote probably for me to get paid first over them, you know, and typically, you know, like let's say that they borrowed against the native token, right? The other option is then that, you know, they would liquidate their native token at a price they probably wouldn't want to sell it at, right? So in this case, I have like no recourse, right? Because the token holders like are incentivized to vote no to me to kind of block me off. So I think like here, you know, this is like one of the main problems why DAOs, you know, don't do, so there's not so much lending to DAOs, right? Because you're missing that recourse. So I guess like, you know, to Marcelo's point here is that, you know, Kabakikin, and in this case, because you have, seniority, you know, in the ability to execute transactions in the treasuries, would be able to then ensure that you know the DAO is actually sticking to what it promised when it engaged in the debt.
Yeah, of course, and we need some experience. You know, we need to make sure that this is possible. And yeah, it's still quite early, but a lot of potential there.
Is it safe to say that there's been some interest? Like, have you heard? Is this something that you've seen teams possibly, you know, seek for and ask your team if you can enable such activity?
Yes, for sure. Especially in the last bear market, we had a lot of teams trying to get loans and not wanting to raise tokens because, you know, the price were very, very depressed. So they didn't feel it was fair to raise funds. And for them, it would have been much a better fit to take a loan. Especially for the ones who have cash flows.
Marcelo, shifting over a little bit to you know, the future of Kabakikin and where you fit in. I know your team's actively fundraising. Could you share the aim and what this will enable for you?
We're launching our token and spinning off from the Gnosis DAO in a similar fashion to our sister projects, Kao and Safe. So if GIP 92 goes through, we're going to deploy this token, and at the same time, we're doing a fundraise. The most important goal for this is just to get the strategic partners to fulfill our vision, and also to deliver all of our DeFi protocols to institutional investors. So we're creating these ETF-like products to source the assets from our treasuries to institutional investors. So our goal is hopefully to elevate all of our industry through flows from traditional investors.
Will this ETF-like product be off-chain? Can you clarify?
Yeah, everything is going to be on-chain. Everything we do is on-chain. So this would be on-chain and have our Karpatkis recipe of DeFi strategies.
So, I mean, I think we have seen other ETF-like products before, right? I think, you know, a lot of us, we're familiar with some of them, right? You know, like Index Corp, for example. So maybe you can just mention here, you know, what will like differentiate you guys for, I would say, you know, all of these types of products have had not a lot of success. I think they have, you know, have had like a hard time to grow. So what sets you guys apart? And then I have a follow-up question after.
Yeah, of course. So I could mention a few things like being 10x cheaper, having actually yield on a basket of tokens, having a safe infrastructure, and also that really the most important difference is the market. So far, it's been impossible for anybody, let's say, to invest in any of these type of products. You mentioned, Gustav, let's say, even $5 or $10 million, because they were so small that buying into the secondary markets, you know, you would increase the price maybe 50% with $5-10 million. So somebody needs to bootstrap a fund, then to offer it to investors in a similar fashion to, let's say, Grayscale. That eventually started loading of assets to build the Bitcoin ETFs. So we believe there is something required for Ether and DeFi to provide, right? To provide in size. So a bootstrapping period where we get, I don't know, 100, 200, or $500 million. And then just after we get that, it would be possible for investors to start thinking about DeFi.
I think that that makes a lot of sense. So the next thing is then, you know, I think, you know, also looking a little bit at you know, the current ETFs, right? Or like the current, you know, baskets that we see in DeFi. There's of course like a topic now we're talking about governance and you know, DeFi, you know, meta governance coming out from products like these, you know, like how do you envision this, you know, because of course, like if you're amassing, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in DeFi tokens inside a basket like this, that would also give you like a lot of power. Like how do you intend to potentially, you know, use that power, if so at all?
So with this, this power comes with a big responsibility because
feels like something of course we need before.
we need to, our goal is to support our DAOs. So if our DAOs are not successful, we're not successful. So the way, the right way to do this in our mind is to delegate all of this voting power to professional delegates. So that's how we envision getting professional delegates do their work.
Yeah, I think we are all looking very much forward to that.
So I'm curious, Marcelo, what will KPK, that's the token, right? That's the ticker for your new token. What would that govern?
So it would govern all of our products, all of our, but most specifically our treasury. It would just follow GNO. If you know, there is something called Reality Module that is built on top of Snapshot that allows GNO token holders to enforce on-chain proposals, which means that your token controls anything on-chain, and that includes the treasury. And all of our businesses, let's say the infrastructure, treasury, asset management, the ETF products, absolutely everything we do, all of the revenues are going to flow to our treasury. You know, we treat our treasury just like any other treasury. You can check on our website a report of all our holdings. And KPK will govern our products and our treasury. So yeah, it will be a governance token.
Are you looking for delegates?
for sure. Yeah, in due time. Yeah.
Awesome. Sounds exciting. Any plans for supporting L2s, L2 protocols?
Oh, yes. We have a team working right now on Arbitrum. And yeah, I know the team is working on a few initiatives on layer 2s. So yeah, I'm not part of that team, but yes.
Any final thoughts or comments as we wrap up from either of you?
Let's say the future of DeFi, really. This is something I've been thinking for a long time. You know, just like I mentioned before, first quarter of 2019, we had the most, the leading DeFi protocols who still are the leaders today. I suspect after these 5 years, they will continue being leaders for the most part because, you know, this our industry is very adversarial and it's very tough to survive. So if you have 5 years of track record of surviving, I think Lindy effect really works here. So I suspect these are the ones who are going to lead in the future. It's just nobody cares today because, you know, everybody likes the new shiny thing. So nobody's paying attention. But I'm quite confident that there will be a new DeFi wave that is just going to be DeFi 1.0.
So like we are going to go full circle and return back to the roots. I think that's like a good way to say. Yeah, I would also say, you know, I think it's like, you know, it's super refreshing also to have someone come on. You know, it's not always where we hear so big plans for the industry, right? I think, you know, a lot of the guests we have, they kind of like a very focused on like just their project and how that can be successful. But I feel like you guys, you know, you understand that, you know, if you make DeFi successful, that success will eventually come back to you guys yourself, of course. So it's very refreshing to kind of like see like a, like to hear like a vision like yours, you know, where it's so much about like collaboration and really taking back, because back when DeFi 1.0 was just launching back in 2018 and then in early 2019 was when I was doing BD for Maker. And, you know, all of us had exactly the same mission as you guys, you know, all of us wanted to work together. And, you know, we were doing panels with all the four or five DeFi protocols existing on at every conference. And it was really like a lot of collaboration. So it's really good to kind of like, you know, see how you guys are going back to that.
Definitely excited for the DAO. I think any team, any DeFi team that wants to be a leader, I think it's clear they need to work with Kaparki and enabling all these different strategies. Marcelo, where should we send people if they want to learn more about you and your team? What should we plug?
So you can check our website, karpatki.com. We have our contributions, our reports, a few articles. And but then our X Twitter.
Awesome. Love it. Thank you so much for joining us today, Marcelo.
Oh, thank you, guys. That's a pleasure.
Thank you, Gustav.
Thank you.
We'll see everyone on the next episode of StablePod.